in Washington and WBAI in New York. I'm Amara Evering.
This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. Stay tuned for Black Star News with Milton Alamadi coming up.
Sisters and brothers, welcome to Black Star News Show on WBAI 99.5 FM radio, also streaming on WBAI.org. I am your host, Milton Alamadi. Today, we're going to be looking at the African Diaspora International Film Festival, ADIF. We're looking at the 29th annual edition, starting from November 26th through December the 12th. There'll be virtual and in-person screenings of a total of 77 films from 38 countries, including 38 world, New York, and U.S. premieres. Joining us to discuss the festival and films are Diara Ndor Speck. She is the co-founder of the film festival. And also joining us are two filmmakers, Marcia Weeks and Ed Stokes. Let's go to you first, Diara. Welcome to Black Star News Show. Tell listeners a little bit about this festival and how it's being presented this year.
Hi, Milton. Thank you so much for hosting us. We are super happy to be with you. The festival will be both in person and virtual this year. We start November 26th with opening night film, The Sleeping Negro by Skinner Myers. This is a very creative and daring and imaginative film. It depicts the story of a young African-American man who, even though he's made it, in quote-unquote, in American society, he is still very troubled by the interactions he has around him as a young Black man in America. That's a very interesting film. We're going to have opening night at Cinepolis on November 26th. And then from then, we're going to have screenings both online and in person. The website is nyadiff.org. And I'll tell you more later.
Okay, very good. Very good. And tell us, though, this is the 29th year, is that correct?
That's correct.
What was the main motivation or impetus for starting this festival? Then I'll go to the filmmakers.
The main impetus was to show films that explore the human experience of people of African descent all over the world. When we arrived in 1993, and when we started, we had almost no films that presented a more human experience of us from a global perspective. And we felt as ourselves of African descent from, you know, various roots. I was born in France. My father is from Mali. My partner, Grimes, was born in Cuba. He's of Haitian and Jamaican descent. We didn't see ourselves represented on the big screen, and we didn't see a lot of African-American stories or representation, diverse representation on the big screen. And we felt we could contribute to making a change for that. And 29 years later, we're still doing it because even though there are many, many more stories today, in terms of the value of those stories, there's still some work to be done. So the festival, in our view, is still very much needed today.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Okay, now let me go to the filmmakers and I'll introduce each of them first and then I'll open it to some questions. Marcia Weeks. She's the co-founder of Step by Step Productions, a film company established in Barbados to make films with strong social messages to impact the youth of the Caribbean and beyond. Over the past decade, The company has produced 6 feature films. They are Hush, Hush 2, Hush 3, Chrissy, Vigilante, The Crossing, and Barrow, Freedom Fighter. And the company is in pre-production for the new film, Joseph. Weeks has been the writer, director, and producer of all these films. She and the films have also won many prestigious awards. For Barrow Freedom Fighter, Weeks won Best Film Director by a Woman of Color. From the African Diaspora International Film Festival in 2018. The film also won the African Movie Academy Awards, also known as AMAA, for Best Diaspora Docudrama. Art Matan Films in New York has offered the company a distribution deal for the film. The second filmmaker is Ed Stokes. He is a native of Brooklyn, New York. Ed attended Long Island University before his career in media production and film. The film, Conversations, The Black Radical Tradition, is his directorial debut. Primarily an editor, Stokes works in both narrative and documentary films. He worked on Books Through Bars, Brings Literature to the Incarcerated, and that was in 2018 through Brick TV, as well as Black in the Holy Land, directed by Mark Lamont Hill, and Something in the Trees, directed by Alfonso Johnson. That was a 2021 release. In terms of media, productions, has worked with Black Enterprise, OK Player, Arise News, and other media outlets. He can also be found covering local New York protests, political conferences, or at Yankee Stadium cheering for the Bronx Bombers. Welcome to all our guests to Black Star News Show.
Thank you, Milton.
Thank you so much, Milton.
It's a pleasure. It's an honor
Very
to be
good.
Here.
Marcia, yes. Why don't we start with you? Your films highlight social issues to impact the youth in the Caribbean and beyond. Talk about the importance of that, first of all.
Yes, again, thank you so much, Milton, for having me here. And I want to congratulate ADIF on the 29th annual edition of their film festival. This is a very, very much needed film festival for us in the diaspora. Concerning my films, I think it's very, very important that in film that as Caribbean people that we're able to tell our own stories. And as we tell these stories, it's important that we provide messages in them, you know, and we have found that with our films that once, you know, we're telling a good story and we are bringing some message or something to improve society, then we find that the Caribbean community, they're very, very open to the film, whether those who live in the Caribbean or those in the diaspora. So it's been very, very important for us to tell our stories and to include in all of that some teaching, something about teaching, some we call it edutainment. There's something happening in the film that is going to pass on some principles to society.
And Marcia, to be honest, is that not the only effectively to the young generation? Edutainment.
You broke up a little bit, and you're asking if this is effective to the young generation?
No, I say, is that not pretty much the only way nowadays to effectively communicate with young people?
Correct. I mean, it's really the only way to do it. you know, because they want the entertainment. And I think that, you know, when you're, if while you're entertaining, you could also teach, it's great. And we found that the young people in the Caribbean, that they love this. You know, the Ministry of Education throughout the region for all of our films allow us to go into the schools and to invite the schools to the cinema. So they take it as a field trip, you know, to come to see the, you know, see the film. They write about it, what they've learned, you know, et cetera. And so it becomes very, very, very important. The teachers, the social studies teachers, mm-hmm. the guidance counselors, they use it as a tool in school. Yeah, so it's very important.
And Marcia, that leads me to the other question. Making the film is one thing. Getting it to the audience that you want to see, that's a whole nother challenge. How do you do this effectively?
You're so correct. You're so correct. You know, we, as I said, we need to tell our stories, but then, you know, how do the people get to hear and see the stories? And that's where, you know, organizations and groups, companies like ADIF come in, distribution companies. We really need more of them. And I think ADIF is doing a fantastic job. You know, but I think we need lots more of them, because we're having a real challenge in getting the film to people so that they can actually see it. A lot of the distribution work for films, especially in the Caribbean, is done by my husband and I. And, so we literally go throughout the Caribbean. We knock on the doors of the, you know, cinemas and the, and all the different, Ministry of Education, Ministry of Culture, and we find ways of getting the film to the people. You know, sometimes we travel overseas and we get it to the people in the diaspora, and they love it. They love to see things, you know, anything that we bring from the Caribbean. Actually, that's how we met Diarra, because our consulate was hosting us there in New York. And so we're on the move. Once we have a film, we don't stop. You know, we keep going. That's our baby, because we don't have a lot of distribution outlets to Caribbean work.
Very good. But that has not deterred you at all.
Not at all.
All right. So let's bring in Ed Stokes here then. Now, Ed, why don't we talk about your own films? What kind of messages do you hope to convey in your film? I mean, I like the name. I mean, Conversations, the Black Radical Tradition.
Right.
I can imagine what the film is about, but obviously listeners want to hear it from you. It's all yours.
Well, thank you, Milton, for providing this platform. And thank you to the African Diaspora International Film Festival for having my film. It's an honor to share this stage with all three of you. So my film Conversations, essentially, it attempts to chronicle the African-American struggle for liberation in the United States, sort of through its forgotten colonial origins into the 21st century. Movement of mass reckoning. And we hear from legendary figures of Black resistance who were driven primarily by the necessity to improve Black lives. So you'll hear from activists, revolutionaries, artists, teachers of America's Black resistance and community building movements. You'll sort of go through an emotional...
Wait, Ed, why are you teasing us? Why don't you give us some names? Give us some names.
I'll give you a few names. So to start off, you'll hear an original commentary, a monologue from our dear brother Mumi Abu-Jamal, who is, you know, a journalist and a political prisoner who has, you know, been fighting the fight and writing about the fight for 30 plus years. You'll hear from local New York City councilman Charles Barron. You'll hear from the poet, great Sonia Sanchez. You'll hear from Ruby Sales, who was a member of SNCC. You'll hear from the great public intellectual Cornel West. You'll hear from another former political prisoner, recently freed political prisoner, Jaleel Muttaqim. So you're familiar with his name. And then you'll hear people from Harry Belafonte. You'll hear from the great Gerald Horn. So it's a nice mix of a who's who of academia and Black struggle.
Absolutely. I agree with you. How long has it taken you to work on this film, if I might ask?
I started sometime around 2018. Mm-hmm. Maybe 20, yeah, about 2017, 2018. It took me about 3 years. So I finished up in 2020, 2019, 2020. And, you know, it took about a year or so to edit. You're talking about hours upon hours of archival footage. You're talking about going through 30 to 40 hours of just straight up interview footage to chop it down to what I think is a digestible four chapters, four 30 minute chapters culminating in a 2 hour film.
This is excellent. I visited Momia a long time ago, 26 mm-hmm. years ago. It's amazing how time flies and he's still incarcerated.
And his voice was just as important as it was back then as it is today. And part of the, you know, looking into getting all of these people into the film is to show, you know, that these people have been, these freedom fighters have been on the, you know, on the grounds doing the work, and their voices are just as, you know, they're just as important as they were then as they are for grooming, you know, the future leaders and my generation and moving forward.
And talk a little bit of the same question I asked Marcia, distribution. What are your plans? As I said, making it is one film. The next challenge is how are we going to get it to the people that need to see it?
Well, as Marcia talked about the going from door to door, I'm sort of in that realm. I've looked at video on demand services. I've also heavily leaned upon sort of the education circuit. So going to different colleges, going to different high schools in Brooklyn, and having them sort of put this into their curriculum, or talk about putting it into their curriculum, and things like that. I feel like on a grassroots level, this is my first documentary film. It's a, you know, it holds a special place in your heart, and just like while you would like it to get out to the Amazons and the Netflix and all of that, there's something to be said for going knocking on door to doors and going to those communities, grassroots, who are doing this work, you know. So this is ultimately, I want to get it into the hands of the people who are going to be teaching people about doing this work and teaching people who are going to be on the lines of the struggle.
Okay, very good. So you actually have been contacting the schools directly yourself.
Absolutely. I have a vast network through colleges, I do a lot of protests. I go to a lot of political forums. So it's just like I'm in contact with a lot of organizations. And, you know, because of the internet has brought this global, yes, audience. We're sort of, you know, a few keystrokes away from connecting with pretty much all corners of the earth. So that has helped out immensely as well.
So it's sort of democratized the production of content.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. So let's come back to you, Marcia. Could you talk a little bit about this film that I keep hearing so much about? Barrow Freedom Fighter. And then after that, maybe you can talk about the current film you're working on, the co-production.
Yes. Let me just say that, you know, listening to my fellow filmmaker talking about the freedom fighters, you know, I can't stop thinking about our freedom fighter here in Barbados, who's the right excellent Errol Walter Barrow. And he, you know, he is actually recognized as the father of Barbados's independence. And that's what our film is about. He's a freedom fighter for us because he, you know, through his work, this man is the passion that he had, we were able to break away from colonialism. At least it's our first step, the first step towards independence, right, in 1966. So our film really chronicles that journey and introduces, you know, this hero, our hero, to the world. Because as I said earlier, we have so many stories that, that we need to tell. And so, all that he had to go through, you know, to give us our independence. I mean, in 1966, Barbados became independent, and we sought to bring that to the screen, because that's an important part of, you know, our history and our legacy.
All right. So let me ask you this question. Because this is an issue that is faced by many African and diaspora African countries, which is that formal independence was one thing. Mm-hmm. The challenge for economic independence is a whole nother issue. Yeah. Now, people like Barrow, they were informed by a certain environment that inspired them to lead that fight for formal independence. Do you see that the young generation are being inspired to fight for economic independence?
It's a great question. I mean, throughout the region, we're seeing still a dependence on colonial powers, whether it be the UK or the US or Canada. A lot of our Caribbean countries are still dependent. They still go with their hands stretched out looking for something, to be honest. A lot of our leaders are doing that. I can say that within the time that Errol Barrow's governance, one of the things that he really, really stressed was, about us being independent, not just on paper, but in thought. Not just in thought, I'm saying, not just in thought, but in practice, how we see ourselves. He really, really tried hard for even our television, what we saw on television. It was his desire that we created, media that would represent us. Very, very important. He really pushed for economic independence, but we're seeing a lot of our younger leaders in the region, they are not necessarily pushing for that. A lot of our leaders in the 60s and 70s, they took great pride in that independence, and they fought for it, like Errol Barrow did. But a lot of our younger leaders are not doing that. I mean, right now, Barbados is getting ready in another 2 weeks to become a republic, to go the second step symbolically, really. Because right. It doesn't really mean anything to us in terms of economics. There's no real economic benefits for becoming a republic. It's purely ceremonial. But they're making that next step, and it is our as someone part of the citizenry, what we are concerned about is that it's not just yes, we're going to do it ceremonially, but are we truly going to cut those colonial ties right. mentally, and also and as you talked about, economically as well? Are we going to always have our hands out to these colonial powers? So right. while we're going to have the republic, but we don't even know as a people in Barbados what kind of republic we're going to have. Right. So I think your question is so very, very important. Are we, yes, we might have become independent and we're going to become a republic, but have we really broken those colonial ties? Right. It's important.
Yeah. I mean, right. And to me, some of the best teachers were people like Walter Rodney, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Who was articulated that very well in how Europe underdeveloped Africa. And then the Kenyan writer Ngugi wa Thiong'o, who has a book called Decolonizing the Mind. And I think that's very important too. And in a way, that is what both of you as filmmakers actually do.
Yes.
Now, listeners, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Black Star News Show on WBAI 99.5 FM radio and also streaming on WBAI.org. I am your host, Milton Alimadi, and today we're discussing the 29th annual African Diaspora International Film Festival, and we are joined today by Diarra Ndor Speck, and she is one of the co-founders, and we're joined by filmmakers Marcia Weeks and Ed Stokes. Listeners, WBI is 100% listener supported. We do not accept commercials, and that is why we can bring you these types of conversations, but it also means we need to remind you to support WBAI, and you can do so by picking up the phone and dialing 212-209-2950. Any contribution will help us continue to bring you these types of conversations. You can also adopt any one of our shows as a buddy. You can adopt Black Star News Show and any other show, in which case the pledge is taken out of your debit or credit card, whatever amount you designate on a monthly basis. You can do that by going to give and then the number 2 and then WBAI.org. Now back to our guest. Why don't I come back to you, Ed? The same questions I was actually asking Marcia, in terms of decolonizing the minds of our African peoples. And I suppose the people that you interviewed in your documentary, that is, has been their lifelong work, working to liberate the mind, because once the mind is liberated, only then can you engage in other liberation activities. So discuss that generally and then specifically as it relates to your film.
Well, yes, I think that just to start with myself, you sort of to make a film like this, to tell it from our perspective, you have to, you know, shed, you know, pretty much all of the some of the historical inaccuracies we were fed, or me specifically through public education, you know, here in America, in New York specifically. But with that being said, many of the subjects that I spoke to, they went through transformations. Many of the people, they either changed their names or changed, you know, various identities to adopt this this new mindset that they had come into themselves. I'd like to highlight, you know, one person specifically, the late Abdul Hafiz Muhammad. He was the late minister of Mosque number 7 for the Nation of Islam up in Harlem. And
with a dear friend, please continue.
So he spoke to me about, you know, the evolution of how he comes, you know, how he gained to earn that name, and you talk about economic independence and developing the mind, and this is coming from the teachings of, you know, of Minister Farrakhan, and his teachings coming from the great Honorable Elijah Muhammad. So it's just like this is a mindset of liberation. This is a economic development of speaking of liberation. And so people like Brother Muhammad, his life, you know, was dedicated to that, you know, was dedicated towards Blacks understanding that is just like do for self, you know, is just like. And so I want to move on. Another person, Brother Sekou Odinga, he's a former political prisoner, member of the Black Liberation Army, member of the Black Panther Party. He goes through a radical transformation. He comes into the movement as Nathaniel Burns. He comes out Sekou Odinga. This is over a 32, 33 year, you know, evolution of the mind, evolution of the thinking. You talk about literature, you circle back to people like Sonia Sanchez, who have expressed a desire for Black liberation through books and through writing. Amina Baraka, the late
yes, of course.
Yes, right. So she's in the film, and she talks about her work that she's done with New Jersey United, and the evolution and what, you know, what revolution looks like. So it's an encompassing thing. It's something that, you know, you never, I don't feel as if you ever arrive, because you're always searching for the new iteration of what this is going to look like. You talk about, you asked if this relates to the children, to this generation. I'd say the answer is yes. You know, a lot of children, a lot of kids now, they're able, people like Cornel West and people like Gerald Horn and Anthony Montero and Playthell Benjamin, you know, they're physically able to go into the institutions and talk to these firsthand experiences on being on the front lines of, you know, back when, you know, life was much harder. Dealing with American imperialism from a physical standpoint, but you know, they've survived and they're living testimonies of what this liberation looks like. So I say yes.
So in fact, you anticipated the question I was going to specifically pose to you.
Okay.
When we look at some of the young people of the 1960s, you know, some I don't know why they're always termed radical, you know. people like Kwame Ture.
Yes.
You know, AKA Stokely Carmichael. These were people in their 20s.
Yeah.
And their level of articulation of the issues and the struggle. Do you think there's something missing in this generation today?
And yes. So,
how can we inspire them to push the envelope just as people like Kwame Ture did?
You know, I think at its core, you have to have that burning desire to want to help, you know, Africans, help yourself and help African-minded and African-like people. I think that's there. There are so many distractions, and you spoke on sort of a financial aspect of it. A lot of, you know, there are a lot of distractions. You know, capitalism seduces you, and it seduces you with advertisement, it seduces you. The list goes on and on. So it's a battle of attention, you know, and I do feel like because of sort of the individual strides that capitalism allows for, people have been elevated to everyone having a brand and being focused on building the brand, and not necessarily, and again, you know, there's grassroots that are doing the work, but you know, it's just like we've been seduced by mainstream media and all of the successes from an individual standpoint that it misses. And when sort of that corporatization of that lifestyle sort of seeps into education, and you're pushed into, you know, being a basketball player, being an entertainer, being, you know, these type of corporate and capitalistic ventures, you sort of you don't teach them that you too can be a revolutionary and have, you know, success and a longevity that someone you talk about, Stoker Kwame Ture has, you know, that you can have the longevity that a sister Ruby Sales have. You can have the longevity that a Harry Belafonte has, you know, and I think that sort of America has done a good job of exposing or punishing those who have, you know, spoken out or taken an active stance against. And when you have people like Brother Mumia, who've been serving 30 years, I'll just wrap it up with this. That serves as sort of, you know, an example of air quote what not to do. You know, so it's like I feel like you're battling for that mind. So it's I feel like you right. gotta have, you know, at that core, the heart to want to help African minded people.
Right. You make a good point with the punishing people that seem to stray offline, like Belafonte. I remember he took a lot of heat after he stood in support of Hugo Chavez mm-hmm. in Venezuela mm-hmm. and condemned Bush. Yeah, so there is a cost to pay. There's a price for freedom. All right, why don't I come back to you, Marcia? Could you speak a little bit about Joseph, which I believe is the current project you're working on?
Well, let me say that I think I said the wrong. Let me just say that we have.
And Marcia, by the way, Marcia.
Yes.
Marcia, one other thing, and this applies to you too, Ed Stokes. Mm-hmm. When I ask you a question, your response can be very liberal. Don't limit yourself to what you think the question is. You can take okay. it anywhere you want. In other words, your answer can be answer plus. How's that?
Plus. Sounds okay, good to lovely. Me.
Okay, that sounds good. Well, I was going to tell you that we have completed that film. That film was completed, and actually we were in the U.S. So when the whole corona broke out, we were promoting the film.
Yes, of course.
And, yes, we had it in some of the cinemas there in the U.S. So that film is a beautiful story. Again, of this, and you know, we're always dealing with stuff, you know, that connects us with Africa and causes us to break the colonial ties. Right. Whether it is, you know, mentally or, you know, becoming independent as we did in Barrow, you know, but, in this particular film, Joseph, it was all, about that mental breaking away from that mental colonial structure right. and wanting to reconnect with Africa. And so that's what this, the character Joseph did. And I was really inspired in doing that movie from working on the story of Barrow, because I realized how much that was, you know, part of his life, wanting us in the Caribbean and us particularly in Barbados, you know, to break away from that from that structure. And I listened to my fellow filmmaker talking about, you asked him the question about the generations, you know, whether young people today, if they are connected to the struggle or believe that there's something greater than themselves to live for, as it relates to the Black struggle. I think of Marcus Garvey, and I think of Sophie Carmichael, and these were two Caribbean, you know, powerhouses from one from Trinidad and the other from Jamaica. And I think one of the things that's happening, Milton, is that we're not passing on generationally this education. And I think my fellow filmmaker and myself, we're trying to do that. In as I said at the start of the program, through Barrow Freedom Fighter, we're able to educate the students in the schools in the Caribbean. And even in the U.S., we got a chance to show in some of the schools in the U.S. They never even heard of him before.
Absolutely.
You know, obviously they wouldn't. And even people in the Caribbean, when when it's shown in to the different Caribbean nations, they don't know about it. And so it's important that we continue to tell our stories and tell these historic stories and tell these heroic stories. Very important that we inspire the next generation. And this is what Barrow is all about. I want to just take the liberty to talk about this speech that Barrow gave. It's called "What Kind of Mirror Image Do You Have of Yourself?"
Wow!
You know, and
the title alone.
Could you repeat?
The title alone is just amazing.
Yes, a powerful speech, and he gave that the 13th of May in 1986, and truly, truly inspired me. And that's in the film. And that is what I think to this day we need to, as African people, whether on the continent or in the diaspora, need to ask ourselves, what kind of mirror image do we have of ourselves? And why is it that when we look in the mirror, we are seeing we still look colonial, you know. Still seeing ourselves in a colonial, this colonial picture comes up. And, you know, those leaders back in the 60s and the 70s, along with the Marcus Garvey, the Stokely Carmichael, they wanted us to have a different mirror image of ourselves. And that's one of the reasons why we did the Barrow, film, because we wanted people everywhere to be inspired. This is an international theme. This is an international theme as we seek to inspire people to see themselves the way that they were created to be, and not through the eyes of anybody else. And I think that once we begin to pass on the education, through the generations of these great men and what they did and what their struggle. When you see in the film how Barrow, he literally had to fight those colonial powers, not physically fight them, because he was a man who was so very, very good with words. And so that's what he used, his pen and his words, you know, to fight them, to give us our independence. And those are the stories that we need to continue to tell our generations.
Excellent, excellent. We're running out of time, so let me come back to you, Ed, briefly.
Milton, may I say something?
I'm coming back to you. You're going to be the last speaker.
Okay, go ahead.
So, Ed, tell listeners why they should come out to the festival and see your film. And also, if you want to provide your social media contact, if anybody wants to continue conversation with you, please feel free to provide that as well.
Okay, yeah, I feel that people should definitely come out to this film, considering the conversations that this country has been engaged in the last year and a half or 2 years, specifically dealing with protest and street heat and things of that nature. I think that this film is timely. I think that you'll come away a much learned and sort of inspired to want to do something about, you know, our condition.
Okay, and any social media contacts if anybody wants to get in touch with you?
Yeah, so I'm on Instagram at firstborntwin1914. So that's 1ST, borntwin1914. And then I am on Twitter at EZ1923. So that alphabet letter E, ZE numerals 1923.
Thank you, Ed. We'd come to you, Marcia, the same questions. Why should people come to this festival? And also any social media contacts.
Yes. Thank you again. You know, the Barrow Freedom Fighter movie is an inspirational film about independence. It's about freedom. It's about freedom of expression and freedom of thought. And, you know, the former U.S. Attorney General, Eric Holder, who is a son of the soil of Barbados by way of his parents. And when he heard that we were doing this film, and he read the script, Milton, he was so inspired that he said to me, I'll narrate the film. So when they come, they'll see, the former U.S. Attorney General, Eric Holder, narrating the film and telling this inspirational story, about this man who was so brave enough to, you know, to basically bring a nation into independence. And I think that is very, very important at this time. So I think it is a universal story, and people should come out to see it. We end the film, the speech, "What kind of mirror image do you have of yourself?" Mm. I won't say the speech here. I want them to go to see the film.
Absolutely.
And to be inspired. Yeah,
it's very powerful.
It will move you to tears.
I agree with you. Okay, so now any social media contacts if people wanted to get in touch with you?
Yes, they can Barrow Freedom Fighter on Facebook. Just look for Barrow Freedom Fighter, B-A-R-R-O-W, Freedom Fighter, or my name, Marcia Weeks, my Facebook page, and just say hello, and we'll, you know, connect them to ways in which they can watch it. I'm sure it's going to be at ADIF. And so Diarra would have all that information as well.
Okay, Diarra, you get the closing words.
Thank you. So actually, we are the African Diaspora Film Festival is produced by Amaton Films, which is the film distribution company that represents Barrow. So we actually also distribute the film and have it available in the U.S. for anybody interested, for schools or anything like that. And what I wanted to say as far as the festival is concerned is, as you can see, we have, you know, films from the Caribbean, Latin American films from the African American experience. And we have a lot of, you know, mini festivals in the festivals. So those two films are part of a program that we've called Black World History Program.
Okay.
And that includes classics like Camp de Tiaoré by Ousmane Sembène and Congo, White King, Red Rubber, Black Death, about King Leopold II of Belgium and the atrocities he committed in the Congo. And so the program has 15 films that when you look at them back to back, it takes you from pre-colonial Africa up to today, the different colonial and movements and resistance movements all over the world for Black liberation. So I wanted to point this out because it's really in line with what we'll be discussing. And our social media is NYADIFF. NYADIFF, that's the at NYADIFF everywhere. That's how you find us.
Why don't you give out the website again?
NYADIFF.org.
Okay, thank you, guys. We've run out of time. Thanks, Diarra. Thank you, Marcia Weeks. Thank you, Ed Stokes. And I also look forward to enjoying the festival.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Milton. Great meeting you, Ed.
Thank you.
Amen. NYADIFF.org.
Okay, thank you, guys. We've run out of time. Thank you, Marcia Weeks. Thank you, Ed Stokes. To enjoying the festival.
Thank you.
Thank you. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. You're listening to Black Star News, hosted and produced by Milton Alamadi, and it is heard usually on Tuesdays at 3 p.m. We transition into the live portion of this program with Milton on the connection. I'm hoping he's connected right
usually
now. So, Milton, you can take it away.
Tuesdays at 3 p.m. We transition into the live portion on the
He's connected right now. So, Milton, you can take it away.
Tuesdays at 3
p.m. Comrade, can you hear me?
I can hear you. I hear a little bit of a loop, but by all means, if you can hear me, that means you can take over the program. So
yes, I think there's some technical issues at the studio. Comrade, can you hear me?
I can hear you. I hear a little bit of a loop. There seems to be some kind of issues, technical issues happening. What I'm going to do is start everything over, and hopefully we can reconnect. And I'm going to try to play a little bit of music here so we can go further into this program for a report from Black Star News. So stay tuned. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. During this hour is usually Black Star News with Milton Alamadi. You did hear most of the hour of his program focusing on the upcoming, African Diaspora International Film Festival, or African Diaspora International Film Festival. I think I got that right. ADIFF.org, which is usually happen around this time. And what was supposed to happen was Milton was supposed to give an analysis along with, let me just get this right here because, you know, things just happen sometimes. With Colin Benjamin talking about the verdict of the yet-to-be-decided Kyle Rittenhouse trial that is happening right now, and they will give a full analysis on that next week instead. And they will give a full analysis on that trial next week starting at 3 p.m. next Tuesday. Okay, so what we're going to do, we're going to transition into the news brief that we usually have, which is a co-production of between WBAI and our sister station in Washington, D.C., WPFW, and then transition over to Sojourner Truth with Margaret Prescott. And once again, this is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. So stay tuned.
WPFW in Washington and WBAI in New York, I'm Amara Evering with some brief news headlines. After a police officer fatally shot an 8-year-old girl in the Philadelphia suburb of Sharon Hill, two teenage boys are now being charged with first-degree murder for, quote, causing the police gunfire. The incident happened on August 27th at a football game where two boys exchanged gunfire outside the stadium. Three police officers unleashed gunfire on the scene, firing at a car they mistakenly believed was the source of the gunshot. 8-year-old Fanta Bility, who was the daughter of two West African immigrants, was killed by the police gunfire. This community has expressed outrage over the charging of the two teenage boys with the murder, while the police officers involved were able to keep their jobs without known penalty. The charges brought up against the boys rest on a legal theory called transferred intent, but experts say that using this legal theory for this case may be a stretch. A grand jury will be reviewing the case on November 18th, quote, so that it may be determined whether the police officer's use of deadly force was justified, according to District Attorney Jack Stolstemer of Delaware County. Criminal justice professor Philip M. Stinson of Bowling Green State University commented on these charges saying, quote, it sounds like a lot of smoke and mirrors to deflect from police accountability. He added, quote, it makes no sense to shoot into a moving vehicle. Former Trump advisor Steve Bannon was released without bail yesterday after turning himself in earlier that day and is now scheduled to be arraigned on Thursday. Last week, Bannon was charged with two counts of criminal contempt of Congress following his refusal to comply with subpoenas to produce documents and sit for a deposition with a select committee investigating the January 6 insurrection. The January 6th committee was seeking to speak with Bannon about his role leading up to the Capitol riot, including time spent in the, quote, war room at the Willard Hotel, where the Trump team was organizing the effort to overturn the 2020 election. Each count of contempt of Congress is a misdemeanor punishable by up to 1 year in jail and a maximum fine of $100,000. Appearing outside the FBI's Washington field office before turning himself in, Bannon remained defiant, claiming that he and his allies were, quote, taking down the Biden regime. The trial over the killing of Ahmaud Arbery by three white men in Georgia continues today with the testimony of a medical examiner. Father and son, Greg and Travis McMichael, armed themselves and pursued Arbery, a 25-year-old black man, in a pickup truck after spotting him jogging in their neighborhood on February 23, 2020. Their neighbor, William Roddy Bryan, joined the chase and took cell phone video of Travis McMichael shooting Arbery three times with a shotgun. Yesterday, Judge Timothy Walmsley denied a request made by defense attorney Kevin Goff to remove the Reverend Jesse Jackson from the courtroom. Jackson was sitting in the back of the courtroom with Arbery's parents. Goff came under fire last week for attempting to bar, quote, any more black pastors coming into the courtroom under the pretense that their presence would influence the jury. The judge also denied a mistrial request Monday after the defense claimed that the crying of Ahmaud Arbery's mother would taint the jurors. The trial of Kyle Rittenhouse is entering its final phase today as jurors began deliberations. Kyle Rittenhouse shot three men, killing two of them and wounding the third, during a protest against police brutality in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Rittenhouse's attorney has argued that he acted in self-defense. Prosecutors argued that Rittenhouse acted more as a vigilante when he brought his gun and traveled from his home in Illinois to Kenosha looking for a fight. Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers has put 500 National Guard troops on standby ahead of a possible verdict. Weather in Washington, D.C. right now is 53 degrees and partly cloudy. In New York City is 48 degrees and also partly cloudy. For WPFW in Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Amar Evering.
This Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. on Extinction Rebellion Radio, Matthew Kearney and I talk about the empty promises of COP26. The 26th Conference of the Parties of the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. Governments from around the world gathered in Glasgow to perform a ritual of talking about climate change while doing absolutely nothing to halt our unfolding climate catastrophe. As the world faces increasing climate catastrophes that displace millions, accelerates extinction, threatens our food supply, and